You're listening to CJSF and 90.1 FM in Burnaby. CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours, sharing music and voices from genres and cultures around the world, reflecting you and the rest of your community. You make CJSF diverse.
This is The Scoop, a weekly regional roundup of stories from remote radio stations in British Columbia. Each week, The Scoop features news created by fellow LJI journalists in the communities of Smithers, Prince George, Nanaimo, Burnaby, and the Comox Valley. LJI is the local journalism initiative, and it's how your best local news is funded on these participating stations. Now, let's see what's happening this week in BC.
Today on The Scoop, Nardwuar the Human Serviette has been a fixture of the Vancouver arts and music scene for over 30 years. And this week at Hollywood Theatre, Nardwuar's Video Vault played where Nardwuar the Human Serviette gave a talk on his career achievements and his love for CITR Radio. Danny Nesvrandi at CJSF in Burnaby was there to take it all in. As a self-taught artist, Mary Fox has been working with ceramics since she was 13 years old, and now, after years of exploring the art and science behind ceramics, Fox is publishing her second book, of which all the proceeds will be donated to the Mary Fox Legacy Project, an initiative to help young potters develop their skills for free. Lauren McKenzie at CHLY in Nanaimo has more. And Coast Mountain College is facing major changes after a sharp drop in international student enrollment, which is now less than 10% of what it was in 2023, after new federal regulations on student permits and postgraduate work programs for international students kicked in. CMC is looking at a $4 million budget shortfall, forcing them to close the Hazelton campus and others by June 30th, 2026. Pam Hassan at CICK News in Smithers has that story. I'm Dan Messick, and you're listening to The Scoop.
Reporting from Vancouver, BC, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. Nardwuar, the human serviette, has been a fixture of the Vancouver arts and music scene for over three decades. Getting a start at UBC's campus community radio station, CITR, in 1987, he's since become one of the most well-known names in music journalism, interviewing artists and bands from Nirvana all the way to Pharrell and Sabrina Carpenter. On November 13th, the Hollywood Theater hosted Nardwuar's Video Vault, a public event where Nardwuar gave a talk on his career, achievements, as well as his love for CITR and community radio.
Of CITR is to expose people to thoughts and ideas that they haven't heard before. There's nothing wrong with the common information that's out there, but why would Kirchner take that back? Try to provide something extra. At CITR, you're not a DJ. A DJ is told what to do. At CITR, you're a writer, you're an operator, you're a producer. You're in total control of what's going on. Especially now with independent media, the power is in your pocket to create. It's absolutely amazing.
Throughout the event, Nardwuar passionately spoke on his prolific career as a music journalist, including some insights on his interview process.
Yeah, that's how hard it was to get your interviews out there. Yeah. Now the power is in your pocket, but I had to record interviews on CITR on cassette, then dump it to Reel to Reel, and then press the vinyl, and then mail the vinyl records to be pressed, and then get the records back, and then mail out the records to various community campus radio stations to get my interviews out there. It was so hard. Now it's like completely easy to be able to get your stuff out there. And I also noticed my mom mentioned the library. She went to the library. She went to the library to research. It's like pretty obvious to actually do something. But that is how hard it is to get your music out there a long time ago.
He also spoke on some of the failures he's experienced throughout his career as well.
This is a letter we got back from The Late Show. Dear Nardwuar, thank you for sending us the videotapes and clippings regarding your show, Nardwuar the Human Serviette. We have discussed it at a recent talent meeting, and unfortunately, do not feel it is right for our show. Thanks for thinking of The Late Show and taking the time to write. And this is the part that hurt the most. Enclosed, please find the tape you sent us. Ah! I thought, okay, I'm rejected, but at least I'll keep the tape for like Christmas parties. But they sent me back the actual tape. I was like, oh my God, so depressed. I thought this would like lead to MTV. And look at the date, March the 25th.
After the talk portion of the event, a surprise concert with Nardwuar's longtime band, The Evaporators, commenced. Once the event ended, we were able to speak briefly with Nardwuar, where we received this as a gift.
Hi, it's Nardwuar, the human serviette, saying you're listening to CJSF Burnaby and do-do-loo-do CJSF. Yeah.
This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM.
This is a CHY News Update. A local potter with 40 years of experience is sharing her knowledge in a book aimed at novice potters. Mary Fox has been working with ceramics since she was 13 years old and has been learning and growing her skills since. Now, after years of exploring the art and science behind ceramics and making a name for herself as a professional potter, Fox has released her second book, this one teaching low-cost glazing methods. CHY met with Fox at her home studio and gallery in Ladysmith to talk about her newest book, Developing Glazes. Fox says as a self-taught artist, she learned her skill through practice and being open to failures while experimenting with new techniques.
Pots. Making the pots is one thing. That uses one part of your body and it's enjoyable. It's frustrating at first, but once you start to get the hang of it, it's enjoyable. And then you have to take what has taken you so long to learn how to do and you need to glaze it and you don't know what the heck you're going to do.
Fox says glazing ceramics can be the most difficult process in pottery. She says many novice potters can be daunted in practicing different glazing techniques, as it can be a costly and time-consuming process. With this in mind, Fox set out to write Developing Glazes to teach readers her methods while still giving readers space to experiment creativity and create something unique. In the book, she showcases her own exploration into making glazes that can be made with easy-to-obtain ingredients that can be fired at low temperatures. All royalties of the book will contribute to the Mary Fox Legacy Project, an initiative Fox created to help young potters develop their skills at no cost.
As things have progressed, I decided to start an apprenticeship program, which is I consider part of the Legacy Project. Now, the Legacy Project has no government funding, so the apprentices are paid. They get 3 weeks holiday a year. They work here full-time, and they are paid through the sales of everything that is sold here goes to support the project, the young potters, etc.
The Legacy Project was started in 2021, taking on one new apprentice for a two-year period, where they were mentored by Fox at her home studio. Fox helps them develop their skills and shape their own style. Fox never had the opportunity to apprentice under other potters through her artistic career, but says she's lucky to now be able to give back to the pottery community.
I mean, I never in a million years thought that I would manage as much of as I've managed in my lifetime. Like, I thought that I would be lucky to be able to make a living as a functional potter. I had no idea I was an artist and that all this work would come out of me. And when I was younger, I thought it was a detriment that I had no training.
She says the biggest thing she wants to give her apprentices is the opportunity to take risks.
You know, if you're risking, you have to accept that this piece that you've spent all this time on may not turn out. But if you keep doing the same thing over and over and over again, which a lot of potters do because, oh, I know that that's going to work. I know that that's going to sell. You lose your soul in it. And then you, all of a sudden, the passion that you felt for this field starts to diminish.
Bach says it's a special feeling to watch the young potters come in with their beginner skills and watch them bloom over time.
When did we start to lose our ability to play? And I think losing our ability to play is something that we're seeing throughout society. You know, we need to get back to the fact that, you know, we can actually just do silly things, try different things. Everything doesn't have to be figured out, right?
Box and Harbor Publishing is hosting a celebration of developing glazes on November 15th at 2 p.m. at the Wilson & Co. Gallery and Studio in Ladysmith. Copies of Developing Glazes can be purchased locally in Nanaimo at Window Seat Books, Fireside Books in Parksville, and online on the Harbor Publishing website. For CHY News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This is CICK News. Coast Mountain College is facing major changes after a sharp drop in international student enrollment, which is now less than 10% of what it was in 2023. The decline follows new federal regulations on study permits and post-graduation work programs, which have made it harder for international students to study in Canada. As a result, the college is restructuring to address a $4 million budget shortfall, which includes closing its Hazelton campus by June 30th of 2026, reducing staff and shifting its focus toward local and domestic students. The college also plans to sell some of its real estate assets in Kitimat and Houston as part of a broader effort to stabilize operations and ensure long-term sustainability. Executive Director of External Relations Heather Bastian says the college is restructuring to align with the reduced number of students and to make operations more efficient. Here's Heather now.
Well, I'm Heather Bastian, Executive Director of External Relations at Coast Mountain College.
All right. So I received a communique from Coast Mountain College, and I'm wondering if we could just jump right in. How does the college plan to maintain service levels with this kind of, because 20% is significantly fewer staff across departments?
It is significantly fewer staff. And so there's going to be some restructuring where jobs are blended or revisited to align with what the needs are. But also keep in mind, it's an alignment with the number of students, because without the international students coming, that's a reduction in the number of students we have, and so therefore probably a reduction in the demand on services. So it will probably align quite well, and we're taking the opportunity to revisit positions and see if we can make them more efficient or really take a look at restructuring at this time, because it's such a big shift for us.
Yeah, and part of that restructuring, as you kind of mentioned, was consolidating these administrative and then also some management roles. But how will that restructuring affect internal capacity for things like strategic planning or program development within the college?
I can't really say at this time. Those are obviously, program development is very important, and we're going to keep looking at ways to offer the programs that are needed and in demand. For example, healthcare programs are more in demand than perhaps other types of programs. Trades are very in demand. So we'll be pivoting constantly to make sure that we're delivering what the communities that we serve need.
Now, the decision to close the Hazelton campus that was described in this communique as difficult. But I wonder what specific factors informed that decision and what measures are being taken to support students, staff, and the community of Hazelton through that transition?
Okay. What led to that decision was very low enrollment in on-campus courses at the Hazelton campus. So if you look at our FTE numbers, which is full-time equivalent student numbers for the Hazelton campus, last academic year, that full-time equivalent, which all of the students at the Hazelton campus take one or two courses, they're all part-time. But the FTE summary is 3.69 students. So the Hazleton campus is underutilized. Mm. But part of the reason that it's underutilized is because we've had great success offering in-community programs for various small First Nations communities in and around that area. It means students don't have to travel to the campus location, and that serves those communities better. So it's a little bit more of a custom approach, and the actual maintaining of the building itself is quite expensive. If we can eliminate that kind of overhead cost and put that money into educational opportunities, there's more efficient ways for us to do that.
So just going back also to something that you mentioned earlier, which was the lack of enrollment of international students. And I wonder if in your role or kind of in the C-suite of Coast Mountain College, if you're speaking about how the college plans to offset that loss of cultural diversity, but also the revenue that international enrollment brought to campus life and programming.
Yeah, we haven't really discussed the cultural diversity aspect. It's going to be a shift for us for sure, and not a happy one, but it is what it is. The federal regulations have changed, and they've made Coast Mountain College unappealing to international students for a variety of reasons.
In what ways did the federal government make Coast Mountain College specifically seem unappealing?
It's not specifically our college, it's colleges in general. It's much more challenging now to get a study permit if you are applying to a college versus a university. The study permit approval ratings, our percentages are much lower for us now than they used to be. And part of the reason, too, is that if you have a bachelor's or if you graduate with a bachelor's degree or a master's degree, it can be in any discipline and you would be eligible to apply for a postgraduate work permit. But if you're doing a two-year college diploma, it has to be in some very specific areas in order to qualify for that postgraduate work permit. So students for whom that postgraduate work permit is a critical factor for them are probably looking more at a bachelor's degree or a master's degree if that's the pathway they want to take rather than a two-year college diploma.
Can you share what a vision looks like in practice, particularly for small rural communities that might feel left behind by these changes of less programming and these reductions in staff resulting in restructuring? What kind of hope do you want to give to people who are listening who really do look to Coast Mountain College as their next step after they graduate high school?
But we're definitely focused on aligning our programming with what people are looking for, and that process is going to continue. Things like healthcare programs, trades programs, these are in high demand, and the employment is available as soon as you graduate. Our nursing students and our practical nursing students have jobs right away. So those kinds of programs are going to grow. We also have some available programs like the Education Assistant Program, which allows you to do your program online in the evenings. So if you work in the day, you can still do the program in the evenings. And you do your practicum in your home community, wherever that is. So you can bring the importance of having education assistants in classrooms to whatever classroom location you're in. It's the same model that we use for our early childhood care and education. So we're adapting to both our region and how education is changing in the world, what people's goals are through their education.
Yeah, absolutely. Heather, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me about this today.
My pleasure. Thanks for your interest.
That was Heather Bastian, the External Communications Director from Coast Mountain College, about the financial challenges behind recent layoffs and the closure of Coast Mountain College's Hazleton campus. But how are students feeling about these changes? To get that perspective, I spoke with Bushra Ansari, Executive Director of the Coast Mountain Students Union. Ansari says while the college is working to adapt through online and community-based learning, students are worried about what's being lost, from campus life to cultural diversity, and the growing uncertainty around program availability and international enrollment. Here's that conversation now.
I'm Bushra Ansari. I'm with Coast Mountain Students Union. It is a student-led organization. I really appreciate the college's effort to support students through these campuses and services that we have.
Thank you for taking the time to speak with me. I guess if you wouldn't mind just telling me a little bit about what your role with the student union, what it means to be the executive director there.
So my role is based on three pillars. We work on three pillars: advocacy, events, and services. Advocacy being the primary one, where we participate in provincial and local campaigns, where we work with the students to, for example, if we have high tuition fee, we have a campaign for that. If we have rent and housing affordability as an issue, we have a campaign for that. So we work with the students, we run campaigns, we promote those, and we inform them that we can ask for more funding from the provincial government so that they don't have to pay high tuition fee.
How do you feel about the closure of the Hazleton campus?
But yes, the Hazleton campus is of value because the students who are in Northern BC, they bring in so much talent and so much value to the communities, to the employers. So that is not really good, the campus closing, because there are so many Indigenous students who would be willing to go and study. But now, since they don't have a campus on Hazleton, they'll have to travel a longer distance.
Yeah, and it's fun. It's interesting to hear that perspective, because when I was speaking with Heather, they framed it as a lot of classes are being offered online and within the community as well. But you at the student union, you're not feeling the same way about that?
I really appreciate them having online classes and having that facility and tech support. But if we had that funding from the government, we would not need to close the campuses, right? Mm-hmm. And people could have that on-campus experience. It's just not attending online classes. It's more about the college experience that you get, the student experience.
Yeah, I agree. So as representing students for Coast Mountain College, what kind of feedback are you hearing from students?
So mostly the feedbacks were about uncertainty. So many students were like, we don't have enough courses. We are on wait list. We don't know how we are going to complete our program. Sometimes we don't have an instructor. Sometimes we don't have enough time to complete the program. So for example, if a student is on an international student visa, they have a very limited time to complete their program, because then you do not want to get into the hassle of applying for a study permit extension. So if you don't have enough instructors, if you are on a wait list and you don't have those courses available at your campus, you'll have to find other universities. So obviously a lot of uncertainty, a lot of fear of not being able to complete your programs.
And what do you feel maybe people outside of the college, and by that the people who are listening to this who maybe they themselves are not a student or they don't necessarily have a child that's a student there, what do you feel you want people to understand best about the culture of Coast Mountain College?
There's one thing that I really want people to know, that the culture of Coast Mountain College, it's a very close and a tight community. We have students from different parts of the world. We have students from Terrace, Kitty Mat, the local students, the international students, and it's not like any other college campus that I have seen in BC or any other province. It's like we have less number of students, but we are very well communicated. We have good instructors, we have good staff, we have good people to support us on the campus. And what I have seen is from my batchmates and the other batches that I've seen coming forward after I graduated, that students actually after graduating go and be a part of the community. They do jobs in the banks, they do jobs in the hospital. So they are supporting the economy of the community. The employers love working them. And I really like this chain of people studying in Coast Mountain College, then graduating and then working and finding a job in the community. They just don't graduate and leave and move to a bigger city.
What do you think Coast Mountain College looks like?
Oh, next 5 years, I don't see, let's be honest, I don't see the end of the tunnel. If we don't have enough international students, because international students were like 50 to 60% of what the students were on campus, right? And if we don't have enough international students, I see that we are in a lot of trouble, because those were technically 50% of what we had on campus. Those were the ones running the community mostly. Those were the ones that were taking up programs and courses, and now we have a lot of empty programs and courses.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you so much.
That's it for this week's Scoop. Catch us next week, Thursdays at 12 p.m. in Smithers, Thursdays at 4 p.m. in Burnaby, Fridays at 8 a.m. in Nanaimo and weekdays at 7:30 in Prince George. The Scoop was made possible by funding from the Canadian government and the Local Journalism Initiative, a Community Radio Fund of Canada initiative.
Get ready for Listen Up. The Geography Student Union presents a night of live music starting at 5 p.m. on November 29th at the Student Union Building Ballroom on SFU Burnaby campus, featuring Sleepy Gonzalez, The Lunchtime Band, and Tiger Really. Tickets are $15, available online or at the door while they last. Open to all ages and everyone.
Is Bird Note. Ray Youngbear is a writer, musician, and a member of Meskwaki Nation. He considers himself a word collector, writing poetry in both English and Meskwaki, his first language. And he enjoys taking photos of the birds around his home in Iowa. In the spring of 2021, he was spending time with his grandson, Ozzy Youngbear.
We were watching robins around this time, and I just began composing a song based on us watching the robins as they hunted for earthworms, more than anything to entertain my grandson, to try and coincide the hopping movements of the robin with the song itself. The English translation is robin. Robin, our grandson enjoys watching you hunt for earthworms. Hunt for earthworms.
Ray Youngbear later recorded the song for a music collection called For the Birds, the Birdsong Project. Over 200 musicians, artists, and writers contributed, with proceeds going to the National Audubon Society. Find a link to Ray Youngbear's song and the complete music collection on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
You're now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia. We strive to provide perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media. If you'd like to know more about us, check out our website at cjsf.ca.
Good day. You're listening to Free City Radio. I'm Stefan Christoph, and this is edition 292. On the broadcast this week, I'm going to be sharing a project that is called Crying Glacier. This is really a moving work that experiments between sound art and climate change. This looks at the sounds of glaciers that are melting and is a beautiful release as a